I'd like to build on the foundation that Harry has set with a lot of this background information, which is essential that you know. You need to know what the market is. You need to know how to, you can improve your position. But let's take a broader look at the landscape here first. And that is that first thing you have to recognize here is that negotiation begins with the application. And I think that one of the things that we need to recognize or admit is that some of us are very good at negotiating on behalf of others. Sometimes we're not so good at negotiating for ourselves, and that makes sense. But negotiation begins with the application. So where it says where the blank line for your last salary or salary required, don't put anything in there. You don't have to answer that. You may be familiar in negotiation. There are three positions: the high initial demand, the nice to have, and the must have. So that is the employer's high initial demand. So I think a good way to reorient yourself for thinking about looking at the employment, whether it's you're moving to, you're out of work and moving to a job, or you're working and looking at a better job, we have to think like salespeople do. And there's a good adage, if you've never heard it, make it part of your thinking, make it the fundamental part of how you approach the job search. And that is, you always establish value before price. Otherwise, you're Walmart. So, and there's not many Walmarts of us walking around. You want to be always creating the picture of value. How are you going to solve the problem? How do you contribute? What skills, education, experience, professional certifications do you have that make it easier to hire you? So if we understand the buy-sell landscape, then let's develop it a little bit more here. Let's cultivate this landscape. You are the seller, and the employer is the customer. And here, this is the reversal that makes us sometimes not so well able to negotiate for ourselves, because we're in the position of being the seller. Unusual, sometimes uncomfortable one for us. But everybody lives by selling something. And what we are selling, our professional services, our accomplishments, our ability to succeed, our history of success. So you have to orient your thinking in that fashion. And also, continuing on this theme, you are showcasing your negotiation skills from the very time of the application where it said salary required. What you are doing is a mini negotiation with your customer, your employer. It's a live audition of your negotiation skills that's going on here. And one of the things that not all the time, but one of the things you have to be prepared for with employers is, if you can be browbeaten or forced, then how are you going to react when you're negotiating with suppliers? Now, just take a little detour here to mention that one of the things Harry did not talk about is that the society does work with for its members, I believe, with CV resume development, and they also have positions from employers. So it's just another resource, another asset that you find at the society. Now back to our personal situations here. There are some negotiations are going to be influenced by whether you're new or you're experienced. Relatively newer or more junior folks are looking at a different strategy than would an experienced veteran with a lot of credentials and initials behind their name. So this is not a one-size-fits-all. So but what we can do that affects all of us is, let's look at some tips that certainly do have an effect on all of us. And the first one here is about the salary question. It's tempting to want to get to it But remember, we are talking about establishing value before price. We want to be giving a potential employer as many reasons for buying our services so that the price is, or the salary, is not as daunting as it might otherwise be because you have all these things going for you. Another thing that you do not want to do here is discuss salary on the first interview. This is the rough equivalent of the first date. There are so many other things to learn about. Harry mentioned, well, what are the responsibilities? What is the authority? How many people am I managing? And by the way, you need to do a lot of research on this yourself ahead of time. You do not want to be asking questions at the interview that you should already know. If it's a public company, you can research it. Their 4K statements, their quarterly statements, annual earnings, even the analyst quarterly analyst teleconference, you want to listen in on. You can do Google searches. I mean, this is not new to any of us now. You need to be fully prepared about what this employer does so that you can provide reasons why you are a good fit for them. In short, the salary is commensurate with the skills required. You've got to find out exactly what they are looking for from you, what they want, where we say in the consulting business, well, where is the pain? And frequently you'll find that when you get the employer talking, very good idea, have the employer do a lot more of the talking. Because that's when you're going to find out areas you can jump in and say, well, here's how I could help in solving that problem. So I'm trying to give you the flavor of how you want to be approaching these things. Authority and responsibility influence, as we say, the compensation. So we need to clarify what they are. We have to know what they are. We can't give the employer what they want if we don't know what it is. So make sure that we know what is their motivation and what do they want to get out of hiring you. When I was practicing this, I was thinking about, well, the question might come up, what about if someone, you're discussing these things, and well, we really need to know about salary because it's a threshold or a deal breaker.
Well, we got a couple of those questions coming in, you're addressing it.
All right. Do we have one right now?
What about the situation in which the employer will not continue with the process unless you provide salary, history, and requirements? And we had another question about filling in an online application that doesn't proceed unless you fill in a number in the salary blank. So we had those two questions.
Okay, what was the first one again, Susan, please?
The situation in which the employer will not continue with the process unless you provide salary, history, and requirements.
Okay, well, we have a decision to make here because, and certainly, if this is between you and salvation, you do it. And that's something that you're going to have to back off on because that's the dynamics of the marketplace. But the caveat is you have to do this eyes open because if you're engaging in a foot race to the low number, and if that's all the employer wants is a low number, and you're willing to do that for a while, then by golly, do it. But you also have to keep in mind that if someone's that willing to take advantage of the situation and not compensate you for your skills and your accomplishments and your credentials, then keep the wolf away from the door for a while and look for something else. I don't see anything wrong with that.
And we have another question that's related. If you don't discuss salary, how do you know the salary range for the position is acceptable?
You can look at the salary survey, number of employees, industry, and get a pretty good idea where you are. What you're trying to do with this, everybody, is you're trying to come to, it's called pull marketing. You're pulling the employer towards you. You're trying to get to the point where the employer almost says, you know what, we've got to have this guy. They are better, in general, the employers, knowing what's in the market because they're in the business of hiring folks all the time. Where we fall down is we haven't done the research like the salary report, and we don't know what's expected there. But how, if you've done your research on this employer and you know that this would be a good fit, you pursue it. When the salary comes up towards the end, you'll be in a better position.
Yes, you're filling in an application online, and they're asking you what your desired salary is, and if you don't fill in the blank, you can't proceed with the application. So we have a question that wants to know, what do you do in that situation?
I think you have to put something in there, or you're not going to get considered at all. But just as Robert said just a minute ago, you know, if you have a general idea of what the salary requirements should be for that job based on the industry and the various points that I covered, size of a company, where it's located, and so forth, you can put in an average. And then if you get an interview after that, then you can go from there and say, well, this was my target, but, you know, I can go down, or the job is more than what you indicated, I would want more for that, etc. So in other words, you use it as a starting point by taking an average. What do you think of that, Robert?
I think it's a pretty good piece of advice.
Great, thank you.
And here's something I think you have to recognize in the as well. There's a rule of thumb with employers that the employees, unless there's something terribly extraordinary going on, like abuse or some type of harassment, the employers recognize that the employees change jobs for about a 15% increase. Now, of course, that's subject to market dynamics, but that's a pretty decent rule of thumb. And we already talked about this, the poor employment market, or depending upon if you don't have a job, I mean, that's going to influence the way that you go about that. We also mentioned this, you get the job, have the income, and go on to a better job. We came up in one of the questions. Oh, and to get back to this foot race to the low number, this is an important point because this with price. Any idiot can get a lower price. I mean, there's nothing magic about getting a lower price on something if you're a buyer. It doesn't work, or no one knows your phone number, you got trouble, or they can't deliver it. So it violates everything we know about total cost of ownership. Remember, you're selling. So you're selling your qualities, your ability, your experience, your designations. And a foot race to the low number violates that, just put it in slightly different terms here. And in that vein of the lowest total cost of ownership solution for this job, the more impressive your accomplishments are and your professional designations, this is what differentiates you from your rivals. Harry pointed out there are basic requirements that are necessary to earn professional designation. A lot of people come to purchasing, and maybe some of us on this call are of this ilk. We did good at something else, so our reward for that success was a sentence to purchasing. And I see this a lot. People are accounts payable, or they were in sales, or, hey, you got to be in purchasing. What's the big deal? Get through prices, bump and grind, and off in a cloud of smoke. Well, that's not what professional purchasing is about, and you need to use your education and your credentials to show the employer the advantage of hiring you over anyone. The experience and credentials issues that we've just been talking about, I just mentioned, the more that you have, the more assets, the more abilities, the more accomplishments. Keep a record of what accomplishments that you've had. Did you start a procurement card or a ghost card program? Did you consolidate the supplier base? And a record of what savings, dollar savings that you accumulated doing this? That's always good advice. Also, in your negotiation, we need to be looking here at the total compensation package. It's not just salary for a lot of folks, and particularly today, increasingly we're looking at health care. Well, what's going on with the health care benefit. But there's other things that go into this. Occasionally, I do work for sales organizations because they're always interested in hearing from the customer. They hear from all kinds of sales trainers. You know, how do you guys think? What are your systems? And I find out that they have wild things in there. Like they have their country club dues are included in their salary total package. Or spousal travel is included because they travel a lot. So what things are important to you, these can be part of the package as well. A specific piece of advice here is do not engage in a bonus plan. Now, Harry talked about bonuses. Bonuses based on lower prices. This is a fool's game. Now, there's an exception to this, of course. If you come into an organization with a lot of maverick spend, and for those not familiar with that term, that means unauthorized purchases. And some companies have everybody from admin assistants to people in marketing and people in facilities, you name it. Everyone is making their own buys. Well, what happens is, since there's no consolidation, the prices are all over the place. In that case, it may make sense to have a bonus plan based upon lower prices. But in a sophisticated organization, you're looking at being compensated on the basis of how you reduce the total cost of the organization. Because if you buy something for a cheaper price, they can't deliver it. You didn't save any money for anything. So, in general, rely on the total cost of ownership philosophy, including when you're negotiating your salary package. Now, here's a key distinction, and this is for the folks who perhaps with more experience. What are they looking for in talking to you? Is it just management, or is it also leadership? So let's make sure we define these terms here. Management, let's say they lost a purchasing manager to a competitor or whatever the reason is. They may be looking for someone to come in and turn the crank. All the initiatives flow from on high, we'll give them to you, and you execute. That's the management side. Leadership is a little different. Leadership is when the company is expecting you, is relying upon you to come up with savings initiatives. So, for instance, how schooled are you in spend analytics? And you take a look at a spend report, PO report, put it together, cleanse the data, and find out that there's money under floorboards everywhere. That might not even be thought of by executive management, who's more worried about things like increasing top-line sales or moving into a Six Sigma initiative or something like that. So they're looking for you to show leadership. Why this is so very important is that most organizations recognize today that purchasing is the number one generator of profitability in all of business. Now, I've got all kinds of economics and math to support this. Please take my word for it. Absolutely the fact. You can't argue with the numbers. If a company makes 10%, that means 90% went out the door and purchases. Whoa! That's a whole lot more savings can be found there. So clarify this management or leadership, because if you're being hired for a leadership position, you are worth a heck of a lot more money. I think we mentioned some things like this, but let's tack back here and close the loop. Firms that have had recent disasters or cited for SEC violations might be looking for a leader out of the valley. And this is not so uncommon. You can find this on the news, on Google, in their annual reports, their quarterly filings. The annual report will talk about the problems that they've had in certain areas. I've been hired as a consultant because of SEC violations of major companies by household names that you would recognize. So this is not isolated. The more you know, the more you know how to solve the problem, the more valuable that you are. That's really where you want to go with this salary negotiation. Solving the problem. What is your value? What are your credentials? What can you do? Give me reasons as the customer to buy from you.
We have a question. What are strategies to approach your current employer for a salary bump to meet the market? I figure that fits in right here with the experience and credentials that you're talking about. How do you sell yourself to get a raise?
Well, the most critical point here is you've got to show me how valuable you are to me. And that means how much money are you making? What is the return on the investment that I have in you? Because if you are making me that much money, by gosh, you're not only smart, you're pretty. I like you all the more. So we've got to be keeping records of what we do. And I would suggest that you review this quarterly with your supervisor. Here's what we had a situation with a problem with your supplier. Here's what I did. The issue was resolved, and here has been the financial result. What are the impact of your decisions? But nothing is going to value more than cost savings, not necessarily price savings. Although, as we said, there are exceptions. But if you can reduce costs and you can take a specific procurement card. I mean, as old as this concept is, it's still not fully embraced. So if your organization is making a lot of repetitive, high-volume, low-dollar purchases, let's say for the maintenance people, that should be done by the maintenance people with a procurement card. You take that ball and you run with it and you explain how this works. You get it set up and you show them, look, an average purchase order across, you can help us on this from Harry, average purchase order across an organization, $150. To buy a $10 widget, that don't make any sense. So this is the kind of thing you do where you show where you are saving the company money, and that's the best ammunition you have with that. Last few things I want to talk about here are the trick questions. This comes up either because people don't know any better and they just say things that come to the top of their brain. I mean, for instance, how many times, and round it off to the nearest 1,000, have you heard someone say when your dog comes up to sniff them on their legs, oh, he must be smell my dog. It goes with the territory. People feel obligated to say it. So just beware of these type of things. There's so much that can be said about communication. Here's the big thing for us in purchasing. We tend to be left brain types. Scientific, logical, accounting, business, engineering, processes. Communication, our sales brethren are better at that because they're right-brained. And that's a people skill, not a process skill. So we're not too good at that. And we can get tripped up in these things. And we can go on and on. There's a whole lot about this. I just want to pick out some crucial things here. First, this question. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I mean, that's like the he smells my dog. Probably smells my dog answer. Listen, if you're 27 years old and this is your second job, do not say you want to be VP of purchasing and replace the guy who's interviewing you in 5 years. That's probably not a good move. Tell me about your weaknesses. Turn all these things around. Where do you want to be in 5 years? Well, I can tell you, I can't predict the future, but I can tell you what's happened in the previous 5 years, type of challenges that I've had and what I've done to overcome them and turn them to our advantage. As your employer, I want to know that. That's the kind of thing, I mean, they don't even know what they want with that silly question. But turn it around to your advantage. So refocus the closed-ended questions. Open-ended questions begin with what, how. Closed-ended question and answer that's a yes or a no. So are you asking me what happened when I came across a challenge in answer to the about your weaknesses question? Turn it always to the closed-ended question. Hypothetical. Never, ever answer a hypothetical question. A hypothetical question is, well, what would you do when faced with such and such a situation? I've done work over the years as an expert witness in purchasing and spent a lot of time around lawyers as an arbitrator on panels settling business disputes. Hypothetical is a trick question, and lawyers will tell you all the time in mock depositions when doing them or mock testimony that never answer a hypothetical question. Ask for the fellow to rephrase it and give you more specifics because there's too many things that can go into it. The lawyer never wants to ask a question that he doesn't know the answer to. Same with us. Turn this question around and say, there's too many variables of a hypothetical, but I can tell you specifically it's one situation that I had, and this is how it turned out, and make it favorable to you.
Robert, I have a question that's related to all the questions that you're talking about. So much of the guidance we receive regarding salary negotiation and job interviews presumes that the interviewer or employer is an experienced interviewer. How do you gauge and navigate the savviness of the interviewer in order to identify their needs and maximize your salary offer?
You would like to get beyond the HR person because if you're in any substantial job, because that's not who's going to hire you. It's either going to be the executive management team or maybe the global purchasing director. But expect that you're going to have to go jump through the hoops with HR, and that's something you have to do to get by. So they're the ones who particularly are going to ask you these open-ended questions that you need to refocus so that they can say to the management, hey, you know, this person knows how to do this stuff. They probably have no idea that you refocus the question on them, but they like the response that you gave. And then the second part of that question was, Susan, because I'm getting too cranked up with this here, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. How do you gauge and navigate the savviness of the interviewer in order to identify their needs and maximize your salary offer?
Okay, well, presuming this is going to come from the, not HR, but from the purchasing folks themselves, you need to be talking about them in trade terms and lingo. And if you start talking about, presuming now you're very conversant with these matters, strategic sourcing, spend analytics, procure-to-pay solutions, and the other person is conversant with that, well, that's great. Now you look, that person is making a decision in the mind. You know what this person, this interviewee knows about this stuff? I know about that. That makes this person as smart as I am. I like them already. If they don't know about this, they start scratching their heads and say, you know what? We need leadership here. This person is looking more attractive to us. So I think to be able to gauge, this presumes inherently that you are equally skilled or equal or overskilled than the person interviewing you. I think is an important piece here. So much to learn about negotiation, and we just tend to do it better for others than ourselves. We look to another profession here, the physicians, and the expression is, physician, heal thyself. Same with us.
We'll take one more question regarding negotiating an initial salary. Do most companies expect candidates to negotiate an initial salary offer for a buyer purchasing position? And would it reflect poorly if the candidate did not negotiate the initial offer?
It depends on whether we're junior or more experienced. Certainly, for the more experienced folks, it's mandatory that the negotiation occur between buyer and the seller here because, as we mentioned, it is a live audition. So that would need to happen with the younger folks or those who have lost their job and just want to get another job. Maybe not so much, if I understand the question.
So even if the offer is a decent one and you need a job, if you don't negotiate, that won't reflect poorly on you?
Depends upon your personal motivation. I think I would always try nibbling. For instance, if the job offer is 70, remember we had the three negotiation positions, high initial demand, nice to have, must have, and 65 was your must have. 70 certainly would fall into the nice to have. If you'd establish 80 as the stretch or the dream goal of your high initial demand, you might be willing to say, you know what, could say to the employer, well, okay, if we did that, and always could use the conditional if we were to set this as a basis, what types of bonus plans we can negotiate with respect to cost savings or leadership initiatives that would affect the bonus plan. So that allows you to conditionally accept an offer, provided it can be improved through your performance, which is hard for most employers to turn down. They like the bump involved in that.
I got an input there, kind of amusing, I think. A friend of mine who accepted a job out of town for a purchasing manager, in other words, he had to transfer or move to another city, they wanted him, and they, you know, they gave him a certain salary, and he said, well, I'll only come with you if I can have one afternoon a week off to play golf at a country club that you pay for. And he got it, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, just like the sales guys. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, great.